It's time for your weekly dose of Wayne's Comics.
Welcome to episode 414 of the Wayne's Comics Podcast. As always, thanks so much for listening. This week, we wrap up 2019 with a great interview with creator Travis Gibb. He's put together many great books, and his latest one is Broke Down and Four Dead Bodies. Two issues have come out already, and he's got more coming. He talks about how he makes them happen, including Kickstarter, and what the story's about, as well as he's become a comic professional in his own right. I thought he'd be a great one to wrap up this year with, so I'm sure you're going to enjoy what he has to say. There's a lot to get to in this episode, so let's get on with the show. It's great to welcome to the podcast Travis Gibb, creator of such good things as Broke Down and Four Dead Bodies and other good things. How are you doing today, Travis?
Good. How are you, Wayne?
Good. It's good to talk with you. I'm trying to catch up on the stuff you've done before the current book. Can you give us a little bit of history on your comics experience?
Yeah. So my first thing I ever worked on was a book called Government Bodies, which from Across the Pond Studios. That was in like 2002, 2001, something around there. I've also done, I was in Negative Burns, which is a huge thing for a lot of people. That's, the old classic from Bendis and Alan Moore and Neil Gaiman. All of them kind of came from Negative Burns. So I was in that back in the day in the 2000s. And then a couple other anthologies. And then I kind of disappeared because I had a baby. And then I just kind of jumped back into the market with Broke Down, and then I've been doing a whole bunch of stuff since then.
Okay, yeah, so, all right, well, the last time I saw you was at Daytona Beach. I think they had like a one-day convention, and I wasn't behind the table, so I could walk around and see, and I saw you there, and that's where I think I got number two. I had Broke Down before. So, I know a lot of folks have talked with you in the past about, you know, your experience in indie comics. Why don't we talk a little bit about that, and then I want to dive into the books, because you're one of those people that seem to, are very supportive of other indie creators. Talk a little bit about that.
Yeah, I mean, for me, it's such a different world coming from doing this in the early 2000s to now and having that gap. So I didn't, back in the day, we were on digital webbing, we were on a couple of forums. There was a couple of forums and it was a small knit community. We all just wanted to raise enough money to print some books and that was it. We didn't have crowdfunding or any of that stuff to really get you to the next level. So, community and comics go hand in hand for me because you couldn't do it on your own back in the day. You needed other people to back you up. You needed somebody to give you a shot because that was the only way you were going to do stuff. So now you get to 2019, almost 2020. We're in a very different world where we can kind of do it yourself, right? If you have an idea and you have the art, you can go live and do your own thing. So for me, it's ingrained that community has to be part of it. So I take part in a lot of community activities, from the Advocator book, which I helped co-create, which is a book where we grab indie books and do like 4 or 5 page stories, to this coming up year, I'm doing an anthology that a whole bunch of big name people are in, called Cthulhu versus Wizard of Oz. So that's going to be really cool. And it's a big anthology putting everything together, but instead of in a regular anthology, there's actually a story in it. It's just loosely based. So it's not like a whole bunch of individual stories. This is one complete story from beginning to end. It's just everyone has their own part of that little story.
Mm-hmm. Cool. Do you, any idea when that's going to hit?
We're looking for October. That's the plan. So it's gonna be a holiday release. But I mean, we've got some big names in it. We got Richard Rivera. We've got Dirk Manning. We've got John Crother. We've got Carl Moline. We've got all sorts of different people who want to work in this from various different walks of life. I'm trying to look at my list right now. It's about 27 creators.
Wow.
Are all part of it. It's going to be really, really cool. And basically the concept is every person gets a character. So someone will have, you know, for Wizard of Oz, they'll have the Scarecrow, or they'll have Tin Man, and they'll have the Lion, and they'll show what happens when Cthulhu invades and what that looks like.
Mm, okay. Sounds like this is going to be a big book.
Yeah. It's going to be an basically a graphic novel.
Okay. Alrighty. So are you going to Kickstarter that?
Yeah, of course. Yeah. Everything will be Kickstarter. It just seems to be the way of the world.
Well, I have often said on this podcast that I regret that Kickstarter's only been around as long as it has, because you're living proof that if Kickstarter had been around sooner, we might have had other stories. And, you know, some stories we never got to read because there was no Kickstarter and no crowdfunding. So I'm kind of glad that it's around now, because I get to read all these things that I probably would never see if it hadn't been for that.
Yeah, I mean, I look in my closet and all these indie books that I picked up, you know, in the early 2000s of indie guys who just couldn't get past issue one or two because they just couldn't afford to do the con circuit, you know, or they had kids. All these various things that held them back from finishing that work. So there's a bunch of dead stories.
So I was listening, like I said, to other interviews that you had done. You were mentioning something that fascinated me. You studied how to be successful at Kickstarter is one of the things you've done. Can you give us a little bit of an idea about what you picked up from that?
Yeah. So one of the secrets of Kickstarter that a lot of people don't realize, and it's really basic, but it's really important, is that you have to find a fan base before you jump on Kickstarter. You know, the reason why people fail on Kickstarter is one of three reasons. One, their goal is just too unrealistic. Two, they didn't do any work prior to putting it up, meaning they just threw something up. Hey, I have this idea. I really want you to do it. And number three is they didn't build a fan base. They didn't let people know, get excited about it. You know, the launch mentality works for everything. I mean, iPhone doesn't need to do a launch. iPhone can just come out with a new iPhone and it's fine. And we know this because, you know, all the other phones do it. All the other phones do fine. They don't, you know, but iPhone sells better. Why? Because they do a launch with it. Same things with the PlayStation 5 or whatever the new Xbox is going to call. These launches help do it. So a Kickstarter, instead of viewing it as a, you know, crowdfunding or trying to get money, use it as a launch of your product. This is your product going out in the world.
Because it's interesting, because Ron Randall, who's been on the podcast before, he does a lot of Kickstarters, which helps him do like to Trekker books. He's got a omnibus, or whatever he calls it, of all the Trekker that's come out so far in one big volume. And a month from now, he's already advertising it right now to come out in a month. So he wants people to be aware to jump on board when the time comes. I always think that's a good idea. I think letting people know, like you're talking about a launch, he's gearing up for that by letting people know ahead of time that this is coming so we can plan for it. So I think that's a great idea. I think that's good stuff. So how many Kickstarters have you run?
That is a great question. I'm trying to think off my head. I think it's 9 right now.
Wow.
Which is crazy because I have the 2 broke down books, and then I have the 3 advocated, which is 5. And then I helped a couple of novelists get their stuff off the ground. And then I did Dog Days, which was kind of associated with me. I think I'm at 9.
Wow.
And then I have a small one coming out in January, and then I have broke down 2 around the same time. So I'll probably have 2 going in January. 3.
Down. Yeah, I was going to say, because I got 2 already, so I know. You had to have Kickstarter to get that.
Yeah.
So I see you at a lot of cons and stuff, too, because I saw you, I think, back at, what's his name? Acme had a creator con. I think you were there. That's where I got number 1. From you, and I got number 2 at Daytona. So you get around. You're part of like Florida. There's this healthy indie community going around. It's really fascinating to me, because I wouldn't think Florida would be a place where comics would thrive. That's the thing that always surprises me. is that, because, you know, I expect someplace cold where people have to stay inside, they'll work on comics. But there's a lot of people down here in the state of Florida, I think yourself included, who enjoy working on comics, and you could be tempted by outdoor stuff, but instead you're working on books inside, and, you know, which can be a solitary thing. So, I mean, is that something you've always wanted to do, was to create comics?
Yeah, absolutely. My first dream was film. You know, I came to Florida. I moved to Florida from New Hampshire to be in film. That was my whole goal. My genius idea was, people go to California, people go to New York, but if I go to Florida, I'll have the edge. Because as a little kid on TV, you see the Disney parades and you see Nickelodeon. You knew Nickelodeon used to be filmed at Universal Studios, right? So you're like, oh, there's an avenue here. You know, when I moved down here, the Punisher movie was filming right in Miami. I was like, oh my goodness, this is up and coming. This is going to be the place. That did not happen. but when I moved down here, I started going to real cons. I had never been to real cons. I had been to a couple of small conventions, but I had never been to like a mega con and saw this is what a con looks like. And this is before CrossGen took over MegaCon and changed the way it views and stuff. They still haven't, like, Marvel and DC don't really have a place at the Comic-Con as they used to. They used to dominate in Florida back in the day. So I went and fell in love, and that's when I met, you know, the guys from Across the Ground Studios. His name is Stefan Nielsen. You probably never heard of him, but he actually is the marketing director over at Aftershock Comics.
Yeah, I've met him.
Yeah.
He's a good guy.
He's a great guy and really, really connected, has done lots of things in comics, has a great story to tell. And he gave me a shot and really, you know, allowed me to keep doing stuff. Because I was a script writer when I was in film school. That's what I did. I was writing all the scripts. Out of all the films I did in film school, I did 90% of them were my scripts. Mm-hmm. Even like on all the group projects, I would always choose my scripts.
Because it's interesting that you say that, because when I read Broke Down and Four Dead Bodies, the thing that comes across to me is like it's a screams TV show or movie, the way that you write it with kind of a cinematic feel to it, which is good. It really feels good on the page. I think it really works very well. So that's interesting to hear that, because one of the things I wanted to mention was the fact that it does feel like this should be on television or should be in a movie theater, the way that it goes. So that's pretty cool stuff. So, well, why don't you talk? Let's talk about Broke Down and Four Dead Bodies. First of all, you know, people always criticize me. I wait too late to find out how people can get it. If people want to get this book, how do they get it?
You can go to BrokeDownAndFourDeadBodies.com. You can order physical copies there. You can also go to Comixology if you want to download the digital. You can get it on the website as well, but Comixology has a great platform. You can get it there. There's a couple other places, but those are the two major places to get it.
Okay, very good. Of course, we see you at cons and stuff like that.
Yeah.
We usually have them with you there, too. We'll talk about that later. We'll get to where you're going to be, maybe if you know, in 2020 so far. Where did the idea come for this book? First of all, why don't you, before we get to that, talk about what this book is about?
Yeah, so Broke Down and Four Dead Bodies is about two guys who break down on the side of the road. They have a case that seems to be very important. There's a mystery behind the case. They got a situation where there's dead bodies everywhere and everybody's out to get them. They got the cops after them. They've got the mafia after them. They got a Spanish gang after them. They got a biker gang after them. Everybody's out to get them. Lots of guns, lots of violence, lots of F words. that's my pitch.
Now, you've touched on something I wanted to talk about.
Okay.
In the beginning, they are there and they, well, there's a deal going down, shall we say. Now, you mentioned the case. You do a crafty thing as far as the artwork goes. People look inside the case and they say there's nothing in it, but we don't see that.
Cool.
So I'm questioning whether that's really the case, the way it is. So I and this is the thing: if you don't see a dead body, you don't know the person's dead. It's kind of like I'm that way. I fight people up in the case and they say there's nothing in there. I don't believe it till I actually see the case and there's really nothing in there. So is that like something we're going to carry on with in the book as we move forward?
Yeah, absolutely. Issue 3, you'll figure out exactly what's in the case.
Okay.
Like it'll be so there is something in the case. And you'll notice the terminology. There's a character who says there's nothing in the case, and then but the guys who broke it down, and I don't care, it's not a major spoiler, the Mexican gang, they say there's no money in the case. They didn't say nothing was in the safe. They say there's no money in the case.
Okay.
Which is what was supposed to be in there. So there's a big connection to all that stuff. I wanted to get that mystery in there. You asked earlier, you know, we were going to talk about where this idea came from.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it came from have you ever read the book Stray Bullets?
No.
So Stray Bullets is an amazing book. It's about 50 – no, it's way – it's probably about 80 so issues or so now. Mm-hmm. It's done by Doug LePlan, and it's an older book. It's been around forever. It's through Image. He used to do it himself. Mm-hmm. And in the first issue, it's about this this special needs boy who gets in a situation and he murders a whole bunch of people and he doesn't know what to do. And he leaves the dead bodies in a car on the side of the road, just walks away from it. And that always fascinated me. And I wanted to write that. The other thing was I loved Quentin Tarantino movies growing up. And like, even the ones that are kind of associated with Quentin Tarantino, right? Like the Guy Ritchie, Lock, Stock, and Two Smoking Barrels, or The Snatch, all those movies, and they just disappeared because that kind of genre went away. He started doing cowboy westerns and all sorts of stuff. So I wanted to pick up that and kind of give a thing to that vein. And I kind of show that, especially in the first issue. I give tons of nods to Quentin Tarantino and then kind of drive him my own way.
Mm-hmm. See, the main two characters, one guy's name is Denver and the other guy is Randy, are the two characters. Yeah. Denver is the guy of color and Randy is the blonde guy. Yep. And the two of them, of course, obviously we can tell the difference between two. I always hate books when they're two blondes and I don't know who's who. You picked characters who I know right away. The thing that's really fascinating to me about your writing is the surprises that we come across. Right off the bat, there's a thing that happens 5 years ago when Denver is apparently trying to hold up somebody.
Yeah.
And it doesn't go the way I expected, shall we say.
Yeah.
I don't know if you want to spoil that, but it's right at the very beginning, but, you know, he's there, I guess it's trying to hold up a bank or something, and all of a sudden, he turns to talk to a woman that Denver does, and the guy, it's
Mr. Washington.
Washington, yeah. He, let's just say he subdues him at that point. Yeah. And I thought, well, he's going to call the cops, and that's going to be it, and this guy's going to end up in jail. But no, that's not what happens. There's this wonderful thing. He says, you know, and there's Denver on the floor. He says, I get up. I'm sorry. And then, and he says, no, you don't. He says, not if you want to learn how this really works. And he says to him something I never expected him to say, get up and at least get what you came for. Then meet me outside. Now my jaw was on the ground. What? How does that happen? You know, how does that work like that? And so that is the beginning of their relationship. And that's the fundamental for what's going to happen after that. Just, I was so stunned by that opening. The first three pages just blew me away. And then after that, same kinds of surprises go along. That first issue is just full of surprises, which I really enjoy. I having read comics as long as I have, to be surprised is something I always treasure. So when you start out that way, I was gripped. I said, wait a second. Now what? You know, and literally as you go along, it's like when the transaction starts to happen, it doesn't go according to the plan, shall we say.
Yeah.
And things start to go along. And then, of course, you know, then we get to where the title of the book comes from. They're driving along. And, of course, the poor car gets shot to pieces. And they drive along someplace. And, of course, people are after them now. And the fun part is that they kind of, like typical guy things, they take it out on each other when things don't go well.
Right. Yeah, they clearly hate each other. They're not getting along. You know they have some sort of connection because we kind of established that, and you're building the story of it, you know. And as because you said you got issue two, right? So you read issue two.
Mm-hmm.
We start issue two the same kind of way where we show Mr. Washington meeting another young Randy and how that interaction met. So we're kind of showing how these people meet this one guy who's really not even in the book, right? Mr. Washington.
Yeah. He's kind of like a person that makes things happen. He's not the one who does the things. He's the person behind the scenes working the things. So that's fascinating to me right there. That guy, I could see him being like Samuel Jackson or something like that, being that, playing that character or something.
Yeah,
that would be so great. Now, are these characters, you know, I mentioned that I see that actor playing that character. Are these characters based on some people that you know? Are they your imagination? Where did like Randy and Denver come from?
So Randy is based off of a friend of mine I had in high school. His name was Steven. And what we used to do a LARP. Are you familiar what LARPing is?
A little.
Yeah. So we used to play what's called a vampire LARP, which is like, you know, we kind of pretend to be vampires and do all sorts of stuff. But he had a really good ability as kind of an actor to get crazy for a minute and then shut it off. And I really was fascinated by that. So that character is kind of based off of him. And you'll see that where Randy continues to lose his cool and he pulls it back together. And I like that about him because he's just as crazy as Denver, because Denver's crazy the whole time. Denver, he's a wild man. He wants to be a gangster so bad, but he doesn't really get how it all works. And he's willing to pull his gun out faster than it needs to be. And you kind of wonder, he's kind of like a gangbanger who just seems to get lucky, and what his skill set is. We still haven't even shown his skill set and why he's useful in the book. So that's who those are based off of. Mr. Washington's kind of the kingpin character. He does have some difference, but he's kind of based off of, you know, just the way Frank Miller wrote Kingpin. You know, I needed that kind of character. So it's very, very similar to that. He does have different motivations. He's a very different character. But in this, you know, arc, this four-issue miniseries, you won't see much of that. And he's kind of a kingpin character. And then Miguel is based off of a friend of mine, Fred, who was just this cunning guy. He was always very charming with women, but he always had that weird, like, I'm going to screw you over if I have to attitude. You ever have meet that guy who's just like, we're friends, but this guy would throw me to the wolves if he had to.
You know? Now, the one thing, the title, of course, says Four Dead Bodies, and yet by issue number two, that number is no longer valid, shall we say.
Right.
at the end of number one, there's and I don't want to spoil too much, but there's a police figure arrives.
Yeah.
And at the end of number two, you put a little bit of background as to how that person got there.
Yeah.
So I was, you know, the thing of it is I noticed these guys, wherever they go, the dead bodies are in their wake all the time. Has that happened to them before this, or is this really where this manifests itself?
Well, this is where it goes crazy. But yeah, these guys have been working together for a long time. You know, the goal of Broke Down and Four Dead Bodies is really I'm creating a universe. This is one aspect of the universe. And then I go from there and build, you know, the big storyline that I want to tell. But I need to build that universe. So this is getting a whole bunch of the elements together so I can show you that universe that I'm trying to create. That's why I did that little 2-page backup showing that this is a real city. There's real people. These aren't just random things that are happening. There's reasons behind everything, and that's going to continue. Issue two has another 2-page story. Issue three has a 2-page story. Issue four has a 2-page story, and then after this mini series, we're going to one shots.
So there's
a whole bunch of one shots. So the first one's called Broke Down and Tapped Out, which is a wrestling story. It's set in the same universe, but it's Breakdown. The main title of the book is called Broke Down. It's just the extra stuff is kind of what we're doing in the particular issue.
But you're not going to have a car break down every time, are you?
No.
Okay.
Broke Down is actually more of a state of mind than an issue. Like Broke Down and Tapped Out is, you know, a wrestler who's, you know, get down his luck. He's never made it to the big leagues, never made it to WWE. And how does that affect him? We have Broke Down and Patched In, which is, you know, a guy who wants to join a motorcycle club. What does that look like? You know, so we're telling stories about broken people and how they manifest in this world. And it's all leading up to something. And we're creating this arc and this what these cases are. Because as you know, in issue two, there's multiple cases, not just one. So what are these cases for? What are they a part of?
See, in a superhero book, they would introduce different characters, especially the Marvel Universe. They introduced all these different characters in individual movies, and then they brought them all together. So it sounds like you're doing something similar, but they're not superheroes. They're more individual characters. We get to know them, and as that we go along, then when we get to a certain point, you're going to, in some way, bring them all into one place or one situation?
Yeah. The last, you listen to some of my interviews, so you may already be spoiled by this, but yeah, it's all leading up to a book called Broke Down and Locked Up, which is a lot of the characters will find themselves incarcerated, and how does that play out? It will be really interesting. So we're introducing a lot of characters, and then we're going to see what happens with those characters when we get them all locked up and stuck in one building, and what happens with that.
That's really interesting. I'm always fascinated. I don't understand the criminal mind.
Right.
I don't get it. That's why these things fascinate me, because I don't get it. If I have trouble with somebody, I don't want to kill them. I want to get away from them.
Right.
So to see this kind of stuff, I don't get that, but that's part of the interest to me, is to figure out, you know, to understand a little better why people do this stuff, because I don't understand it. So that's kind of the fun. Talk to me about that. I mean, as far as understanding, you know, how criminals function and what they think and stuff, did you study that? Is that something that you, or is that just something that you kind of, for some reason, you understand better than I do, how these thought processes function?
Yeah, well, a lot of it is, you know, I watched a ton of movies, so that's the big thing. So a lot of it's based off of other people's knowledge, I'll be honest. But personally, I come from a drug and alcohol family.
Oh.
So my parents did a lot of drugs, and they sold a lot of drugs. They both passed away now. My dad died of an overdose. So I have had, you know, prison and drug addicts in my house most of my life.
Wow.
So I kind of know how they think, and what I wanted to show, the consistent of all of them, is they're all broken. They all have a brokenness to them that they can't resolve, right? They just can't get through this one thing that happened to them. For my dad's father died when he was really young, and he just never recovered. He just couldn't recover, and he had so much shame. He didn't feel connected to his family. He felt like everyone was mourning and never got whatever he needed as a child, and that's what caused him to go down the slump. For my mom lived in a trailer park, so she was just raised that way. She got into AA later in life, but even AA has its own problems, because AA brings a lot of people who are really broken and were messed up into your household.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I was molested by one of my mom's people, one of my things as a child. So like, and I'm not saying that, I'm saying that as an example, as even when she's trying to get better, things are getting worse because of decisions you make. So they're in these cycles, and I really, really understand that, and I have a heart for that. My wife works in child protection, so I've seen this growing up, and I really want to tell, and those are the stories I want to tell. I want to tell what makes a person broken, and why did they break, and why did they get to this point, you know? And we're going to get that. That's why I show those flashbacks, you know, in the story, is going, here's where they are and where their mindset is. Here's where they are now. How did they get there?
Wow. See, that's fascinating to me. That's exactly the kind of thing I always like to see. I want to understand this stuff. I'm really sorry that you exhibited that first, you know, in first person right in front of you. But wow. See, that's kind of, see, I wasn't raised that way. I was raised like that was cities away from where I was.
Right.
So it was a very different life for me. So that boy, reading this is going to help me understand a lot, because I don't get it. Like I said, I see that and I go, what are they doing?
Yeah.
You know, I always think I get an extra job if I want to buy something. I don't want to steal it. I want to earn money to be able to buy it, because it's not mine until I pay for it. But so I look at this stuff and I go, I don't get it. You know, so this might help me understand this a little bit more, because, boy, I just don't, you know, this is something for me that's a real education. So I like that. It's one thing about the book I'm really enjoying, is kind of seeing this. Because, you know, one of the things that we do see, like, the police person and stuff like that. We do see some of the people that are less bent, shall we say.
Sure.
And so I see those. This is not going to be like a superhero book where there's the good guys versus the bad guys. These are mostly bent people trying to all, or broke people trying to interact with each other and figure out what to do, sounds like.
Yeah, we're absolutely we're writing a story that is 100% basic, can happen in real life. You know, one of the things that I hate about crime comics in 2020 is everyone does a crime comic, but they always add something special to it. So probably the biggest crime comic that's come out in the last 10 years or so is 100 Bullets. Mm-hmm. You know, it's done by Image. Mm-hmm. And though 100 Bullets is a great crime story, I really, really love it. It has this supernatural aspect where someone gives someone a case of 100 bullets and they can do whatever they want. And it's this government organizations and all this crazy stuff. It gets just crazier and crazier because you can do that in comics. I really want to get it basic and, you know, just let crime be crime, mm-hmm. like it was in the 1940s. That's a reason why I didn't go noir. You know, most people who do crime books, it would be dark and gritty, dark and gritty. I didn't have it drawn that way. I had it drawn actually, you know, full life, full color, bright colors, because I want it to feel more like a movie, not like a noir comic book, not like a Sin City.
Hmm. Well, of course, that leads to the next question. How'd you find your art team?
Yeah, so I found Felix. So here's an interesting thing. So Broke Down and Four Dead Bodies has been in works since 2005, 2006.
Wow.
So I hired him to do Broke Down and Four Dead Bodies. That was going to be one of my first books. I hired him, and then he had a kid. He did the first two issues. Back in the day, if you switched artists mid-production, you were dead in the water. Mm-hmm. Back in the day, if you read comics. And even me as a reader, I remember back in the day, if you're an indie guy and you switch your artist midway through and I don't like that new art, I'm not going to continue. It's just not worth it. Mm-hmm. So I lived in that. So he quit because of that, and then I couldn't finish it, and I was like, darn. So fast forward to 2017, my wife is looking at some art that I have, and she's like, oh, what's this? I was like, oh, I was going to do a comic one day. She's like, oh, what have you done? And I went into a old file and showed her two issues of Broke Down and Four Dead Bodies. And she's like, what? You have two issues done of this thing? You've never published it? I was like, yeah, that's kind of dumb. So I started going on the production of figuring out how to do Kickstarter and launching it. And I took those two issues and made it one really good issue.
Ah.
Which is great, because if I would have wrote the same story, you know, back then, it wouldn't have been as good. I'm glad, like, I had the time. I have some more life experience. Mm-hmm. You know, I think I was a lot – all that stuff was really fresh, you know. I just moved out of my parents' house. Mm-hmm. I just got out of that lifestyle. So that stuff was really fresh. Mm-hmm. But now I can see from the outside perspective how the real world works, and the real world doesn't live in that drug, alcohol world of that. That's not the real world. Mm-hmm. And when I moved away and learned that that's not the real world, I now can explain that to people who live in this other world, you know?
Boy, that's me. You're talking to me right there. I I see this stuff, and I just, like I said, it's alien to me. I don't get it. I know it exists. I haven't seen it, although I have to say, one of the reasons this is really poignant to me was I grew up in a suburb up in northeastern Pennsylvania. And where I was, like I said, crime was something you saw on television. You know, it didn't happen around you. But now, you go to that same town, there are drug houses all throughout the town. My sister actually had one next to her. And I called the police and I said, can't you do something? Do something. Oh, man, they're all over. If I just clear them out of there, they'll move somewhere else. There's no point in doing it, the police officer goes. And I was like, floored. I was like, what? In my idyllic hometown, this is what's going on there now? I couldn't believe it. So this is going to be a real experience for me. Read your books. I think I'm going to gain a lot from it. Not only the story's really good, too. I don't want to make it sound like the story's not good. It's very gripping. Like I said, there are twists and turns aplenty. Every couple pages, there's a twist that surprises me. And I really love that about the book. I think it's just one of those great things. So somebody like me who's read comics for a long time, you can surprise me. That's a real accomplishment. So I love that about the books. I think that, you know, like I said, every 2 to 3 pages, I'm startled.
Yeah, I follow the old Chuck Dixon format. Chuck Dixon once said in an interview, and it always stuck with me. He says something has to happen every 3 pages or you're going to lose your audience. Mm-hmm. So I really try to give that a con. And so I need to have the plot move forward every three or so pages, or I'm going to lose my audience. So that's really something that really works with me, because Chuck Dixon, you know, back in the day when he was writing Nightwing and all those things, like he was king. He really was. He was a master storyteller on getting characters that people didn't really care about being relevant. I just really, you sound like you've read comics for a long time. I just realized something about comics that really, really is, this may hurt you when you hear it. Mm-hmm. Have you ever noticed that in comics, there's no forgiveness?
Yeah.
Like if you mess up as a writer and you give a bad story, you're gone.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
And it doesn't happen. Like Stephen King's written tons of bad books and then he gets a hit and then he gets back on his horse. Comics don't work like that. If you give, you get like one more shot and then you don't have that second wave. So most of these writers never got their second wave, even Claremont. Once Claremont was off of X-Men, they let him come and do a small little thing, but they never really give him X-Men back.
No.
They'll give him Extreme X-Men or Excalibur or some random thing. They're never going to give him at the cusp of what he was doing back to him.
Right.
And I find that so fascinating that comics is such a cutthroat industry.
Yeah.
That we do that. And it's really weird because it just shouldn't be that way. Because I would love to see some of these older writers who used to do some amazing things get another shot.
Well, it's true of artists too, because I was looking at, I go to cons and I see like Jerry Ordway was one that I noticed, and I haven't seen him draw in a long time. I was reading one of the holiday books or one of the DC put out, and there was a story drawn by Jerry Ordway and written by Paul Dini, and I thought, oh my gosh, it's so good to see Jerry Ordway's art. But it's the truth about writers and artists, and especially in the comics industry, you may be a big thing now. I don't know if I should mention this, but I interviewed Colin Bunn a long time ago, and I saw him at a convention, and I said to him, I said, oh man, you're doing all this stuff. You're in Marvel, doing all these things. Yeah, he says, my career is just about to take a nosedive. He goes, and I went, what? I said, wherever you go, you're going to be a star at this point. I don't care if you go to other companies and stuff. They're going to be thrilled to have you because you're a former Marvel guy and stuff like that. And he said, well, you'll see. We'll see. He goes, but there's that attitude. He's done his thing now, and now it's going to be less no matter what he does after that. And I don't think that. Jerry Ordway's art to me is just as good as it ever was. And so if he does something, I'm thrilled to see it. I'll be glad to buy the book. But that's not true of everybody, unfortunately. Like, I see Kevin Maguire at cons, and I go, I told him one time, I said, that Justice League cover you did way back then? That was the first selfie. I said, you did selfies long before, people ever did that. And so, these guys, I don't understand why people fall out of favor like that. He's doing Supergirl right now. Well, he was. I don't know if he still is. I haven't seen him on it for a little while. But those kinds of things always fascinate me because I don't understand why people, they're always looking for the next big thing.
Yeah, it's crazy. Donnie Cates actually just said in an interview, he said he has a 1998 copy of Wizard that says top writers. And he says only two of those writers are relevant these days.
Wow.
And he's like, and it's just crazy. So this is an interesting industry where we have to kind of deal with that.
Mm-hmm. Wow. Yeah, that's a scary thing because, just as I talked about like Kickstarters and stuff, I mean, I don't think these creators have run out of great things to do or to draw or to stories to tell. I kind of wish that there's a company called AWA, and I always forget what that stands for, but they've got some of the better known names. And then you've got like Aftershock, who are bringing in people that are named people to do their own creator own thing, stuff like that. And I think that's always great because I don't see these people are, they're not has-beens in my mind. They still have great stuff going on.
Yeah, it's really fascinating. And it just came to me the other day when I thought about it. Like it just came to me. And they'll bring people back. Like people are going to argue that they don't bring people back. And they do, absolutely. Eric Larson just did a small little thing in Spider-Man. Mm-hmm. But they'll never really bring him back. No. He's never going to be amazing Spider-Man's artist again. That's not going to happen.
But see, in a way, isn't it better to do like an indie comic like what you're doing? Because you can always do it. As long as there's people buying it, you can still do it. And I guess to some degree that works as well for Marvel or DC, as long as the sales are there.
Right.
They'll keep you going. But on the other hand, you don't want to have DC or Marvel level sales all the time. You can still tell stories. I mean, Alan Moore was putting out stories in different comics and stuff like that. And I used to buy them because I liked his crazy stuff. Yeah. And I bought that. Of course, I had to search for it because, you know, some of these companies were such that not every store carried them all the time. And so I'm after that. And so, I'm glad that indie comics like yours are around because they say to people, if you have a story to tell, tell it.
Absolutely. Yeah. We're in a golden age of comics. Really, we are. Because I can self-publish. Mm-hmm. And then I can go to a company like Scout when it's all done and go, hey, here's the numbers that I got in Kickstarter. Here's this, here's that. Would you be willing to get it through Diamond? So I can get a second life with my work as I keep doing stuff, allow somebody to have some of the rights to do some things. And that is really, really cool to see things going. You know, companies like AWA, like that you just mentioned, I mean, that's going to be a killer company next year when it launches. You know, some of the stuff that they're doing is amazing. They have some of the best writers and artists that are up and coming that nobody's heard of doing some stuff. I'm really excited. John Lees is one of my favorite writers right now. He does Sync, and he's done a couple of Mountain Head. He's doing Hotel over there, Hotel Hell. So it's really, really cool to see how comics are doing things and how they're doing things differently to kind of attract this indie crowd.
It's interesting you mentioned about the fact that there's like a second life sometimes. I know of two books that's happening with. You mentioned Richard Rivera, and of course I'm the editor of Stabbity Bunny. Yep. Stabbity Bunny got picked up by Scout, and he had done 6 issues on his own, and then it got picked up by Scout, and they reprinted those 6 issues. Yep. And Richard likes to say that, you know, as they sold more number ones that he did in 3 years going to cons trying to sell. So that's it. And the other one I know is a book I really love called Touching Evil. Dan Doherty does. He self-published them, and I read up to, I think, like 10. It got picked up by Source Point Press, so now they're printing the individual issues.
Nice.
That he had done. So, but that's that second life, it happens, and it's happening more and more. I think indies are kind of like you're showing people this is how I could do it, and then the company comes and picks it up, gives it wider distribution, and it gives you a chance to, you know, you talk about building a fan base. That's one way to build a fan base. You know, you get these people behind you, and then you can draw more people to you.
Right.
As you do those kind of things. So I'm thrilled that that happens because I just think the good stories are going to bubble to the top. You know, all the people are going to notice them, and they're going to want stuff that you're doing and stuff. So I figure Broke Down and all that stuff one day is going to be picked up by a publisher, hopefully not far from now. And, you know, you'll get wider distribution and give people a chance to do those things. I think that'd be great.
Yeah, that's absolutely the plan. You know, I write a book to sell. You know, my goal is to have somebody else pay my bills so I can do it. You know, getting the artist and getting the writer and all that. I'm the writer, but getting the artists together and doing all that, I'd really love someone to do that and just be able to tell my stories. But I don't mind hustling. I love to work. I love to market. Those are things that I do. That's what I do for a living. Mm-hmm. Web design and web marketing.
See, you believe in the product, and when you do that, see, like when we go to cons and I go with Richard and we're talking about it, people can kind of tell if you really enjoy what you're doing and you have really interesting things to show them and tell them about. Right. So you know, there's certain ways we talk about the Stabbity Bunny. We can say, like, the story's about a 7-year-old girl and her 100-year-old plush rabbit and all this stuff. And when you get that, you can just see the people are responding to that because it's something they may not have ever seen before. And we have the banner that we put up behind the booth and has a rabbit on there. And we'll often be at cons and we'll see people aisles away looking at the name and going, what is Stabbity Bunny? I've got to go and find that out. And eventually they come over to our booth and we tell them about it. So it's the same thing with yours. When you go to cons, you can talk about these things. And it's something we haven't seen before. And that's what makes it so interesting to read. It's just, I honestly have no idea what you're going to do next.
Right.
I got to tell you, at the end of issue 2, and I'm not going to spoil it, but let's just say the ending I did not expect.
Yeah.
So now I got to know, what are they going to do now? You know, something, let's just say poor planning gets involved.
Yeah, issue two is really, really hard to write. You know, it's a setup issue. You know, setup issues are the hardest thing to write. Everybody can write an issue one. It's those issues twos and threes that are a little tough, you know, because you've got to set everything up to build towards the ending. In issue two, I introduce you to five different groups, right? Here's five other groups that you didn't see in issue one. Mm-hmm. Here they are. How do they interact? Why are they important, and how am I going to resolve this in two more issues? And that's the fun. That's what I do. I'm just building that ante, building it up.
Mm-hmm. Now, I got to ask, of course, now you've talked about, what, there's four issues in this original series?
Correct.
Okay. You're talking about three and four. You said that Felix Navarro couldn't do the artwork anymore. Is he able to come back, or are you going to get a different artist?
No, Felix. So Felix, that would I think I must have not finished my story. So
okay.
He couldn't finish. And then in 2017, I asked him to finish. I asked him if he'd jump back on. Mm-hmm. And so issue two, he did in 2018. He has already done, we're on page 17. Mm-hmm. Of issue three. So I'm only three pages away from him being four pages away. I have 21 pages this one for issue three. So we'll be done before the end of the year. He gives me about three or four pages every time he sends me pages. So we'll be done very, very soon. And then we'll get that rocket and rolling. I should have issue three out very early next year. I don't want to say a deadline. We did have a small, it got slow all of a sudden, mm-hmm. but then it jumped back up. He, you know, he works on several projects at the same time. So I get him in chunks and, but yeah, he's going to continue. He will be the artist for Broke Down and Four Dead Bodies throughout the whole thing. When we get to Broke Down, the little spinoffs and one shots, I'll have different artists come on. But
yeah, well, that's good. Cause I know some books that they've done a good job of, like an artist can't continue. They get somebody else, and the artwork very closely resembles what they've already done. And sometimes I can't tell that they've switched artists.
Right.
Which can happen these days because you've got a lot of artists. I mean, people go out on Facebook and get artists and, you know, or various different art, you know, websites and stuff and go searching for that kind of stuff. So I did you tell me how you originally found him?
I found him on Digital Webbing.
Digital
Webbing, when that was a thing, I found him on a message board and I hired him and I paid for him to do two issues. We did the two issues. And like I said, I turned that into one issue. And then, you know, he did that other issue last year. He's finishing up this one. We'll have them all out by the end of next year. So that's our big goal, is to get issue three and four out next year, get it all wrapped up in a trade, all nice and special for you.
That was my next question. Are you going to trade them, put them in the trade? Now, okay, so you're talking about issue three coming out next year. You're obviously going to have a Kickstarter. Do you have any idea when that's going to hit?
Yeah. It'll be early February, late January. I haven't got the exact date yet. Make sure he's done all the pages. I'm not worried about color. I'm not worried about lettering because I can get that done in the 30 days that the Kickstarter runs. Mm-hmm. But I need it. I will not ever launch a Kickstarter without knowing the art is done.
Oh, good. Okay. Boy, that's a good idea. Because many times I'm sitting a couple of years waiting for some stuff that I paid for in Kickstarter.
Right.
And then I haven't seen them yet, and I'm kind of going like, well, whatever happened to that? And, you know, I look back, and they're very apologetic, but they don't know when it's going to happen. I always remember the one guy that came on and said, hey, I got this great idea. Give me money, and I'll turn it into a comic book. And everybody said, hey, you could take the money and go on a vacation. You know, you don't even have any art to show what it looks like or anything like that. And of course, he didn't get any money. People were wary of him for that reason. But that's cool. I mean, that's going to be great. Do you, as far as like the trade and stuff like that, do you Kickstarter the trade as well or just the individual?
Yeah, absolutely. I'll Kickstarter the trade as well. And the reason was, it's not really to get the money. I mean, we can afford to buy the trade, but I just continue to build a fan base when I Kickstart. That's why I do it. I want to get a stronger fan base so I continue to get people, you know, who want to be part of this, allow them the opportunity to invest. And the trade is no different than anything else. So we'll get them on the trade. We'll get that out. But I'll probably wait a little bit. I'll probably wait probably, I don't know, 6 months to a year before I produce the trade. Because I really want, I'm not just going to go directly into the trade. Oh, you should have. I want people to be able to buy the individual issues. And you know that two-page story that you were talking about in the back? I'm not going to reprint that in the trade. I really want people to buy the individual issues and get something special if you hunt down those individual issues when they're no longer in print.
It's funny because there's another book that I really like, and I came across at a convention by the name of Star Power.
Okay.
And it's sort of it's kind of like a female Green Lantern, but it's much different than the Green Lantern. That doesn't really do it justice. But I really love the book, and they've done bunches of trades. They also put out hardcovers, but they've sold through the hardcover of the first collection, and I cannot find that. And I don't want to buy the other hardcovers till I get the first one.
Sure.
So every time I see them at a con, I said, you know, I still can't find that number one. And they're always thrilled. See, people, they don't want to sell our stuff. They keep it and read it. And I always think, well, that's a nice thing, you know, for them. But bad news is I can't get this hardcover. I look on eBay all the time. I never see them up for sale.
Wow.
And stuff. So they're always very happy because their fans are buying them to read them and keep them. They're not trying to resell them.
Right.
And stuff. So that's kind of a cool thing. But there's a lot. The indie universe is... I've run into people who said they wanted to do like a diamond previews, but only for indie books. You know, stuff that doesn't get, don't come out through publisher, but you could get them some way. I've never seen that come to pass, but I just think there's so many wonderful things that are out there. I mean, like I said, I've mentioned several of them just talking with you. There are great comics out there that are not in Diamond, you know, and, well, there's people who, you know, have been turned down by Diamond. They go to cons and sell them themselves.
Right.
And stuff like that. So there's such a good, you know, there's so much good storytelling going on. I think you're right. This is a golden era for comics. We are seeing stuff that I never imagined going on. Well, speaking of which, of course, you've got the Broke Down stuff going on. Are there other projects you're working on? Yeah, this may be keeping you pretty busy at the moment with all these. You've talked about several different, you know, iterations you're going to do of it. Are there other projects? As a writer, I just can't imagine you don't have other irons in the fire that you want.
Yeah, absolutely. So I'm finishing up a graphic novel called Dog Days. So Dog Days was a book that was published through Evelzine Publishing. And that's an original graphic novel. So that's being finished right now. It's a little delayed again, because this is when you work with a publisher, right? Mm-hmm. I'm not big enough to work with like a scout who have these systems down. So I'm just kind of like do it with other indie guys. And so we're working through the art. We're hoping to get it out in February. But we kickstarted that. We raised $6,000 on that. So that'll be out next year. I'm going to continue The Advocator. So if you don't know about The Advocator, what it does is we take small independent comic books. We let them submit 4 to 8-page stories, and they kind of put it in our little book. We put 6 together, and then we put it out as a comic. Mm-hmm. And what's cool about it is these stories are individual stories that aren't in their regular book. So for instance, let's use Star Power, that book that you talked about. Mm-hmm. They could submit a 4-page story mm-hmm. and put it in the book. Stabbity Bunny could be the next story. Broke mm-hmm. Down could be after that. All these independent books are in this one book, kind of giving you a smorgasbord, kind of like a distributive of what that looks like. So I help facilitate that. Mm. I'm working on a couple of other projects that are not named yet. But the concept is a bunch of islands. A guy hired me to write his story, and basically, gods created a whole bunch of islands. There's like nine or so islands, and the islands are struggling because they have a lack of oxygen because there's not enough, vegetation to keep everyone breathing. So they have everyone on this like system where they die if they're allowed so much oxygen for their life, and if they take it, they die. Yeah. And basically that's just the concept of the world and people trying to change that status quo. So those are what I'm working on right now. Lots of things, and there's always new things that I'm working on that aren't anywhere, but that's what I'm doing.
Well, some of them you can't talk about because you don't want somebody to take your idea and run with it and get there before you do. So you know, we don't want to talk about that stuff. But I always think a creator. I used to know a guy that was a writer. But what he did, he watched television shows. And he would get story ideas from watching the television show. Well, they could do a story about this. And he would submit them to he used to do like Farscape stories.
Yeah.
And, you know, he would go to the publisher that was going to publish novels about Farscape, and he would present them an idea for that. They'd hire him to do the story and stuff like that. They could make money off of that, of course.
Yeah.
So there's all kinds of different creativity going on right now. I just think it's just great stuff. Your stuff is really great fun. I wish you continued success, and boy, keep it up. We'll have to talk again sometime, maybe when the Kickstarter start back up.
Yeah, absolutely.
And do that so we can get an update on these good things and tell people what's going on, because I just think it's you know, you're doing a great job of getting the word out, but we can always help with that. And I think that's one of the great things about podcasting is being able to share. I get to talk to people from Scott Snyder through indie people all over the place. It just depends if I think they're high quality. That's why you get on the podcast. And so it'd be great to talk with you maybe in a couple months when you've got the Kickstarters going.
I'd love that. I love that you have such a long, I mean, what episode is, are you on? Like almost 200, right?
Oh no, we're at 400 and
400.
414. Yeah, I've been doing this about 7-8 years now.
That's crazy.
So it's fun for me. I have always had questions, and I've always been dying to ask. And now I get to ask those questions. You know, why is this happening? Like about the characters. Where did the characters come from? I'm always looking at them and going like, where did that come from? How did they come up with those characters like that? So I'm always fascinated by those things. If people want to follow you on social media, how do they do that?
So they find me on Facebook. I keep it open. It's Travis Gibb. And then if you go on Twitter or Instagram, it's Jester Lou, JesterLou. And I'm sure you're thinking, why Jester Lou? And you will eventually find out, but not right now.
So some people I see the names and I go, what?
Right, exactly.
Where did that come from? That's cool. Now, another thing too, conventions. Do you have any idea what conventions you're going to go to in 2020 yet?
I only have my January and February lodged in. I mean, obviously I'll make MegaCon and things like that, but the first one I'm doing is Central Florida Comic Con. Mm-hmm. So I'm doing that one. I am doing Orlando Toy and Comic Con. I should be up there. I'm going to be at Space Coast Comic Con. That's in February. Those are the three that I have lined up. Those are the next three that I have up. And then I've got some store signings for a couple of things coming up after that. But the dates aren't set yet.
It's great fun to talk with you. And boy, much success. And man, I just hope that things just keep getting bigger and better for you all the time, because I think there's a lot of people out there who would love to read your stories and love to become fans and add to your fan base. So, you know, Travis, keep it up. I think you're doing great stuff.
Thank you so much.
People need dramatic examples to shake them out of apathy, and I can't do that as Bruce Wayne. As a man, I'm flesh and blood. I can be ignored. I can be destroyed, but as a symbol.
Get the latest from the comics universe. News, interviews, previews, and reviews. Listen to the weekly Wayne's Comics Podcast so you can keep reading your comics.
And that's a wrap for this episode, as well as 2019 here on the podcast. Again, I really appreciate all your support, and I look forward to next year, which is coming in just a few days. So I'll see you in 2020. But until then, keep reading your comics.